listeners, and thanks for tuning in to this edition of our MetroSite podcast. I'm Beth Schultz, Vice President of Research and Principal Analyst at Metrogy, along with Robin Garris, our CEO and Principal CX Analyst. Today, we are going to be talking about our latest research study, which is the second annual AI for Business Success study, which Robin spearheaded, and we conducted this study in February with more than 1,100 companies globally. Really excited to talk about this study because I know I've been through it a few times, and each time I go through it, I find really new, interesting data points. Okay, so in the study, we found that nearly every company is using AI today to some extent. So where is it most in use, and where is it most in use by industry, but also then by business area and function?
Yeah. Well, hello, everybody, and welcome. As Beth said, I'm Robin Garris, and I did conduct this research, and I will tell you, it's been really, really interesting in some eye-opening areas as well. But like that said, pretty much every company in the study is using AI, whether they want to or not, almost, you know, because it's like passively available in so many different applications that we use, you know. So for example, if you're just on, a company-wide meeting over a meeting platform, there's AI-enabled, you know, transcription and meeting summarization and things like that. So just, you know, almost passively you're using it anyway. And then there are other companies, obviously, that are very aggressive and using it very strategically. So when we looked at the top overall use as far as vertical industries go, actually the top one is manufacturing. And again, this is asking not just about like CX or UC, it's across the board, like where are you using AI across the company? So, you know, they could be using it on the manufacturing floor, they could be using it with product development and design, all sorts of things. So manufacturing followed by financial services, a big user of all this type of technology. High tech is number three. And the next one, before we have like a natural break in our data, would be healthcare, which is really an interesting one because earlier in my career, I remember I used to write practice management pieces for the American Medical News. And at the time, it was like, you know, you couldn't get healthcare companies to even think about using a fax machine, much less anything more advanced. And lately, it's like, you know, the last few years, you've really seen healthcare embrace the more advanced technologies and kind of leapfrog other industries. And they're really doing some cool things with AI. So that's where we see industries in terms of like within a company, where are companies using AI, like what business units are they using it in? IT is number one. So you think about things like being able to automate different functions within IT, being able to do root cause analysis, being able to use AI to help write code. I mean, there's all different ways. We have a whole chart on different ways IT is using AI, and even more advanced like agentics. And then the second one is contact center, you know, and then no surprise there. That's like one of the big areas of using that uses AI. And then the third area is actually sales. So those are kind of the top three. There are others as well using it. But if you look at kind of a bar chart of the most common business areas, those would be the top three. And then in terms of functions, like what business function do we use AI for? Number one is customer service. Number two is automating business workflows. And then the third one is workforce management. So really being able to use AI to automate things like forecasting and scheduling and, you know, being able to help people work more efficiently, better with AI agents and AI assistants, for example. And then the next area would be like cybersecurity and risk management. We're really seeing a lot of uptake in AI in those areas. And there are plenty of others as well in the study, but those are some of the top ones that we're seeing at this point.
So it's everywhere, essentially,
it is,
right?
Yep.
So,
yep.
And with that in mind, then one of the things you asked about in the study was the AI Center for Excellence, right? And a lot of companies planning or that already have. So 38% have one right now, 58% planning. How important is this, do you think, for kind of long-term overall success with AI?
Oh, I think it's really important. I think with any sort of new, very pervasive or transformative technology, a Center of Excellence is almost a necessity, especially with larger companies where you have mid-sized to larger companies where you have different business units and all of a sudden a new technology emerges and you see all these silos because every business unit's sort of doing their own thing. And then there's no consistency and you start breaking security policies and things like that. So, you know, you could think in the past you'd see companies standing up a center of excellence for like wireless, collaboration, cloud, any sort of transformative technology. So I think it's very important for the success of AI. You want to have different viewpoints coming in, which you get with the center of excellence, and you want to get consistency in all of your processes and how you're regulating the technology. And if you don't have one of those, like a center of excellence and regular meetings and a regular group of people from all different disciplines, you're really missing out on a lot, I think.
So is it too early for AI center of excellence to just sort of prove value at this point? Or, I mean, what's our data showing us?
No, our data is actually backing that up. I think you already mentioned we had about 38% of companies that already have a center of excellence stood up. And our research success group, and those are companies, we ask about a series of questions that help us to identify the companies that have higher than average measurable business improvements in the metrics, various metrics that we look at. So the success group, they're showing all sorts of improvement in revenue, in cost savings, in customer satisfaction scores, in employee efficiency, all sorts of things like that. And when we look at our success group versus our non-success group, which are those who are below average, they still may be seeing some improvement, but it's just not as good as a success group. That success group is nearly two times more likely to have an AI center of excellence than the non-success groups. That's just a correlation, but it tells us that that's a common practice that successful companies are doing. Another thing I would say is that, you know, when you look at companies that have a center of excellence, their actual business metrics improve significantly more than those who have no plans for a center of excellence, or even those who are saying, you know, we're planning to do it, but we haven't done it yet. So for example, when you look at companies with a center of excellence, they're seeing a 30% increase in sales. Those with no plans are only seeing a 15% increase in sales. So great, they're still seeing an increase, but they could be even more if they had a center of excellence stood up. Same thing with like CSAT. With the companies that have a center of excellence, their CSAT score goes up by about 35%. Those without one, it's about 25%. So you definitely see some hard numbers that kind of back up the importance of one.
Yeah, that's great. Love the idea, but then having the data back it up is so important.
Yeah.
We've talked about, you know, the two of us and the Metrigy team have talked about the trend that you saw among research participants. And they're thinking about how they're going to work with technology providers and how they want to work with technology providers around AI. So why don't you share with our listeners what you discovered?
Yeah, this is a really interesting one, especially this round of research. So about a year ago, actually when I did this study a year ago, I had a hypothesis that said, you know, AI is moving everything so quickly. The pace of innovation is going so fast that companies are not going to be able to continue buying technology in the same sort of old school IT way that they used to use. And what that was, okay, we have an in-depth understanding, or at least we think we do, an in-depth understanding of technology, and we need to really understand what you're doing before we're going to buy from you to solve a problem or address an opportunity. And that often meant like an IT person and a technical person at the vendor, you know, going head-to-head and arguing maybe and discussing how are you doing this and why are you doing it this way. And, you know, getting into a lot of cycles like that before they're like, okay, now we're convinced that you're doing the right thing. So that's one way, and that's the way companies have been buying. But because of how quickly things are moving now, my hypothesis is it's going to switch to, I just have to have a high level understanding of technology, and I'm going to rely more on my technology partners to make recommendations to me on what I should buy to solve my problem or address my opportunity. So a year ago, it was roughly two-thirds, one-third. Two-thirds saying, oh no, we need to have an in-depth understanding of technology before we make a decision. And about a third roughly saying they wanted to have more of a high-level understanding, rely on their technology providers more. And that it went down, those numbers narrowed a little bit, just by about 5 points 6 months later. And then we just did it again now. So a year after that first question, the percentage that said that they wanted to have an in-depth understanding went from 68% down to 51%. Those who said they wanted to have a high-level understanding went from 33% up to 49%. So we're almost at 50-50 right now in how companies are buying. What this really means is that your decision on who you're going to select as your technology partner is more crucial than ever because you're relying on them. You're trusting them. They have to be a trusted advisor. You're going to come to them with your problems or your opportunities and trust that they're going to give you the right solution that will help address them. So very big shift. And it means a lot. It really means a lot of change to the vendors themselves, because when you think about it, the companies that are more apt to say we want a high level understanding and rely on our vendors are smaller companies. There's more of those. And the smaller companies, the vendors aren't going to be able to serve all these, small and lower end of mid-sized companies that, want to have they just want to rely on them. They can't keep up. They can't keep up with the pace of innovation. So I think this is going to mean a lot for channel partners. It's going to tell us that these channel partners are going to have to do a lot more consultative selling. Maybe they'll be charging for that. New opportunities there, but definitely a shift in how companies are going to be buying.
Well, we'll have to see what happens a few months from now when you do your CX study, where we land with this.
Yeah.
Okay. So we talked about some operational strategic things. Let's talk about technology now. So in this study, this is the first time that we've asked specifically about agentic AI, which that term has just become so buzzy in the last 6 months or so. So what did you ask? What did you learn about it, a company's approach to agentic AI today?
Yeah, so very interesting. Only about 52% of companies are even familiar with the term. So, we've got a long way to go from a technology vendor standpoint to make sure that, people actually know what this actually means.
Well, and maybe we should explain it. What does it mean?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Sorry. As you can see, we have a Doberman in the background now, so that's always a trying to get him out of the way here. We actually did, and that's a good question. We asked companies how do you define agentics? And there were about four different common answers that we saw. Our definition of it is that it's an advanced AI framework that uses large language models, so part of generative AI, to make decisions and take actions autonomously. So in other words, without human involvement at all. So in action, agentics basically help humans in the moment, or they automate an interaction or a process. So I think that the autonomous nature of agentics is a really big piece of it. So I look at the word as kind of the combination of two words, agents and analytics. And so when we're looking at the LLMs are analyzing what's going on and taking action autonomously based on what's going on. Now, I think moving forward, when we look at like agentics 2.0, that's going to expand to include like a hierarchy of AI agents. So you have like the master agents, the sub agents, the assistants, all these bots working together to analyze an issue and take action and close the loop. Some will say that there are vendors that do this already today. I don't think we're quite there today. I think we're still very early stages of agentics, but, we don't see a lot of companies familiar with the term. Among those who are, they still at this point find more value with like functional task specific prompts compared to agentic AI prompts, where it's real adaptive decision making. Actually, you don't even need prompts. It's agentic AI for adaptive decision making. And they're finding that functional task specific prompt more valuable by about 2-1 right now. So we're still very early stages. I don't think a lot of companies really see what the value is yet or have experienced the value. Some have, but not very many. When we ask what their plans are with agentics, most are going to use agentic agents to complement existing AI agents versus like a rip and replace type of thing. I think over time you'll see some shifting going on there. But when we look at all the different types of AI that companies are using or planning to use and spend money on in 2025, the biggest growth area right now is agentics compared to every other area we looked at.
So the evolution of generative AI more or less, roughly. You mentioned prompts a couple of times. What about prompt engineering? That was another Yeah, that was another good area for the study.
You know, as a practice, when we think about prompt engineering, so that's basically crafting a prompt to put into a large language model in such a way that the output gives you exactly what you're looking for. And there is a science to that. In practice, it is vital to 58% of companies. So that's very high for vital, because the next line is important. So you look at the difference between vital and important. I mean, that's huge. 58% of companies saying it's vital. Just coincidentally, the same percentage, 58%, train their employees on how to engineer prompts. So they're teaching them, here's what you need to say. Here are the details you need to provide. If you're asking this type of question, this is what you need to specifically tell the large language model to do. But the other thing is, the majority are also interested in prompt templates. So having a provider give you a list of templates that either you can use to manually enter, or you have as kind of like in the middle, I'm entering something just in natural language as a consumer, or as a human, I'm just entering something in natural language. And then before the large language model actually takes it and processes it, there's something like in the middle, basically, that's looking at what I entered and what do I really mean by that, and clarifying and fine tuning that prompt before it actually goes into the large language model to respond. And so these prompts, you know, either way that they're being used, are really in demand right now. The top value is that they get quick answers and the questions are asked properly to AI. So I'm going to get what I need, and I'm going to get it quickly, and the way it's asked into the large language model is done in a proper way. The problem, one of the reasons why companies aren't using these right now, by the way, is that their provider doesn't offer them. So that's something for vendors to be thinking about. We have a lot more in this area, a lot more questions we asked around prompt engineering. But this gives you a little bit of an overview. Obviously, clients have access to all of the charts. There's about 200 just baseline charts in the study. And we also do all sorts of cuts by vertical industry, by size of company, by global region, all sorts of data here. But it's a big study, and there's a lot more to prompt engineering. We're going to be doing some reports on that coming up as well.
Very meaty study. Absolutely. Lots to think about in this study. But let's go through a few more points here. So what if I'm just getting started? I haven't introduced AI for my customer experience operations, my contact center at all. What should I be considering? Which AI technology should I be considering if I have, you know, specific business goals, whether it's increasing revenue or improving CSAT or customer ratings in general? Have you found kind of tracked which technologies trigger which metric the best?
Yeah, we've done really detailed analysis on this. There's a lot. This goes pretty deep. So if this is something you're interested in, we've looked at cuts by our research success group. We've looked at it by verticals, by sizes of companies. So there's a lot there. I can give you some, you know, kind of high level. We basically evaluate the percentage improvement of specific AI technologies when it comes to certain business metrics. So we basically ask, okay, if you're using AI voice agents, how has that affected your revenue, your customer satisfaction, your costs, your agent efficiency? And then we go down the list of all different types of AI. So as an example, like if you want to increase revenue at your company and you want to, you have budget for AI and you want to know, okay, I can't do everything. I can't boil the ocean, nor should you, by the way. What are the top technologies that are going to help the most with revenue improvement? And in our research, AI-powered content creation actually is number one, followed by agentic. So having those agents be able to, AI agents be able to act independently, act autonomously. Translation, so being able to expand into new countries, new regions, without having to hire people with the same language, who speak the same language. Inferred sentiment, so that's just basically telling you, what are our customers, you know, what do they think of the interaction they just had, even though they didn't respond to our survey? Can I see what we're doing right and wrong so we can continuously improve? And then AI chat agents. So being able to have that capability to interact in real time with natural language in a self-service channel where I'm using a chat agent. Those are the top, and there's a long list, but those are the top ones that actually moved the needle the highest on revenue. Now, don't take that to mean that's the biggest adoption, because as we already said, Agentix is a low adoption so far, but those who are adopting it are seeing good results. So kind of take it that way. But yeah, we've evaluated a long list of AI technologies and how they affect the key business metrics. So if that's something anyone is interested in, please reach out to us and we'd be happy to help you with that.
Okay. So a lot of great information you've already shared. Let's wrap up. Beyond what we already talked about, what are some of the other most sort of interesting or most exciting things that you found in the study?
This is a loaded question because there's so many. And, you know, when I was at, we were recently at Enterprise Connect, talking to a lot of companies about this, and they were asking me that same question. I was like, oh, where do I start? There's a long list. But I'll point out a few, and we're going to be doing a lot more, like webinars and content reports and things like that on this data. There's a lot there. One of the things I would say that I thought was interesting anyway, was that most companies are seeing an ROI right now with their AI deployment. And when we ask them, what's a reasonable wait time to see an ROI? You know, with technology, it's usually like 18 to 24 months. You know, with ROI for AI, it was definitely a bell curve. The tip of that bell curve was 6 to 12 months. And when we looked at our research success group, less than 6 months. So, you know, technology vendors don't have a lot of time to prove their case, to show an ROI. So that was one of the big ones. I think the other thing, you know, we talked earlier about how every company is using AI in some way, shape, or form, but only 27% have a single executive in charge of like company-wide AI strategy today. So that's concerning to me. Now, a lot say they're planning to do this, but that's concerning to me because now we're gonna have silos and a lot of different problems because of those silos, and then revamping and ripping and replacing, and oh, we've got to get everything consistent now. So I would say if you don't have somebody in charge of AI, that's something that needs to be done. Right now, the most common title we see there is like CIO, CTO, but there are a lot of new titles also emerging with AI in them, like Chief AI Officer, Head of AI. So that's actually emerging as a title. Another kind of fun and kind of quirky and interesting one is 68% of companies say that AI can make anyone a salesperson. Just through that real-time coaching, it can make you a salesperson. You know, we always hear about AI cutting jobs. Oh, AI is going to, I'm going to get replaced by AI. But here's a real interesting one. More companies, higher percentage of companies are actually adding new positions than eliminating them. So I think that's a, you know, pretty big aha moment, right? We talk about there's more data scientists being hired, more data analysts, more prompt engineers. Like there's all sorts of, we have a whole list of positions that are being added, you know, to the, to companies now. And a couple more, I would say, I'm really into conversation and interaction analytics right now. I think LLMs can go into every conversation, either listening, using speech analytics, or looking at transcripts and pull out a ton of like nuggets there. And right now, a lot of that's being used within the contact center. But I had a hypothesis that these should be used outside the contact center in like executive level dashboards, you know, pull out the information that the executives would want. You know, it might not be as detailed, it might be more high level, but 84% of companies agree with that. They think that interaction analytics should be part of an executive level dashboard. So that's another area that I think, you know, vendors can be looking at to, you know, potentially provide to their customers. And lots more, like I said, and we'll be talking about that in upcoming, you know, webinars and reports.
Okay. So speaking of upcoming things, what is next on the CX agenda for us?
Oh gosh, a lot more studies. So we have our CX Metricast, our annual study coming out here in April. That's looking at all sorts of adoption numbers and, oh, are you leaving your provider? Why? If you're leaving your provider, who are you considering? You know, we have, of course, always our quarterly updates and, you know, just looking at rankings and MetroStars, which are our customer customers rate their providers on a variety of different areas of sentiment and business success. That'll be coming out in April as well. I believe April, late April. We also are in the field with a workforce engagement management study, which is going to be awesome. Really good one there. We have a knowledge management study, Beth, that you are going to be doing. Yeah. Really, I'm really excited about that one. Just data and knowledge management. Like, you know, we talk about AI all the time, but if you don't have that strong data foundation, that could be a big issue. So that's really going to be a cool study. We do our annual customer experience optimization study will be coming out. So lots there. We do have also something we're calling the Expert Insights Program. We have four different topics we're going to be doing in 2025 in the area of CX, a lot of AI in there. Like we're going to do one on agentics, you know, for example, we're going to do one on interaction analytics. There's we're going to do one on agents, what's going on with agents and how are we using technology to help them. We're also going to be doing one on what do consumers think and about the technology they're getting and how does that compare to what businesses think they're delivering. A lot of disconnects and gaps there. So we have that kind of program. We present our research and then up to three technology providers sponsor these webinar series, and they provide really good insights too. They always have really great ideas of how you can address some of the issues that might arise. So those are some of the things we have coming up, but always lots going on.
Absolutely. So a ton of great stuff in AI for business success. Love to get you guys briefed. So reach out to us and lots of stuff coming down the pike for CX. In the meantime, be sure to visit us at Metrigy.com. Check out that AI for business success study. It's up on the website. All of Metrigy's thought leadership on AI and CX and beyond. And as always, we're really happy to hear from you. So feel free to reach out to us. You can use the contact button on the Metrigy website or just reach out to either of us directly via email, robin@metrigy.com or beth@metrigy.com. And with that, that's all for now. On behalf of Robin and all of the Metrigy team, goodbye till next time and take care, everybody.
Thank you. Thank you.